Hey, Leo here for actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about how comprehension has many degrees and the importance of deriving truth for yourself. A good idea must be chewed to get its juice. Things can be grasped at many different levels of depth. It's important to understand that, to really understand that. And what I mean by things is truths, principles, insights, lessons, teachings, advice, and even facts. It's one thing to hear one of these things being spoken to you, or delivered to you, or taught to you, or to read it in a book, and it's a totally different thing to really, really, really comprehend it in its full significance. And that's what this whole episode is about. It might seem like it's a basic point, but actually it's a critical point. It's foundational to you being able to get the results that are possible from this work. And I see that a lot of people are not getting this point. So be very careful here not to overlook the obvious. This point right here affects everything that you will ever learn in your life. You say you understand, but the question is, to what degree do you understand? It's not enough just to understand what is being told to you. You have to understand much deeper than that. There are many levels to this stuff. Any piece of sufficiently deep wisdom will have many, many, many levels to it, even though it might seem simple on the surface. But looks can be deceiving. And you might hear the exact same teaching spoken over and over again by different people, by different masters, by different yogis, by different teachers. And the problem with that is that hearing it isn't enough. And it's not an issue of memorization. Some people try to desperately take notes as though that is what really counts. That's not what really counts. What counts is, have you grasped all the layers and facets and interconnections and ramifications of this insight or this truth or this principle or this piece of advice that you're being given? How deeply has it affected your life? Have you bothered to actually use your mind to trace through all the ramifications of it, all the corollaries? Have you bothered to actually grasp the significance of what is being told to you? That's what's really important. And what is required to do that is contemplation. You have to contemplate these ideas for yourself. You have to chew them for a good long time, sometimes for days, for weeks, for years, to really understand how profound they are. And not just to understand how profound they are, but to have this insight do work for you in your life, for it to transform you. A lot of people, they're not getting traction with these ideas. That's the problem. And you can spend years just kind of like reading self-help books, but your mind is not getting traction. And that's what I want to help you with here today. So let's go through some examples. That's the best way to illustrate this lesson. For example, you've probably heard that people's opinions of you are irrelevant. Haven't you heard that by now if you are into self-help? And you probably agree with that, and you probably believe that. And if I told you that right now, you'd say, yes, of course, Leo, so let's move on to the next thing. And yet, in reality, what's going on in your life? Maybe your entire life is shaped by people's opinions of you. So in point of fact, it's not irrelevant in your life. And yet when you're told this simple truth that people's opinions of you are irrelevant, you don't get it. You see, you think you get it, but you don't get it. Because you've never seriously contemplated it. You've never really thought about it. And because you're not thinking about it, because you're not taking this idea seriously, you're not getting traction with it. You're not letting it transform your life. Because if you sit there and you think about it over and over again for months, just this one simple idea that people's opinions of you are irrelevant, and you trace all the consequences, all the ramifications, and you see the significance of this, and just how much you are at the effect of other people's opinions, that's going to transform you. And you might say, well, Leo, yeah, I know that. I've heard that before, but I still have social anxiety and I'm still worried what people think about. I still care. I don't know how to stop. That's because you're too preoccupied with getting a solution rather than with actually investigating the lesson. You don't really want to investigate the lesson because your mind is lazy. And I don't blame you. My mind is lazy too. All our minds are lazy. But you have to push past that and really chew these ideas. Because if you really chew this idea, you're becoming conscious of something, which is different from hearing a thing. To become conscious of something is, well, it's like almost like deriving a mathematical proof. You're seeing the inner workings, the inner mechanics, the logic of it. And as you see that, something changes in you that otherwise wouldn't change just by being told the ultimate conclusion. Here's another example. Is you've probably heard that language creates your reality. And if I told you that in passing in one of my episodes, you would say, oh yeah, Leo, that's interesting. That kind of makes sense to me. But how deeply do you grasp that? Because that's a significant statement. You have to take these statements seriously. So when you hear a statement like this, you should say, wow, that's a pretty big claim. Language creates reality. In what way is that true? Is that really true? And if it's true, what does that really mean? I mean, just how much of my reality is created by language? Let me investigate this. Let me actually see how this thing works. That's what you got to do. And you got to dig into it and you got to contemplate it and see where that takes you. But most people, when they hear that, they just say, oh yeah, of course. And they just go on. They missed it. It just goes in one ear and out the other. You see, no traction happened there. Because if you really got the significance of just what this means, that language creates reality, wow. That's a huge thing. That's not an insignificant thing. So the first thing you should realize is, if this is true, it's really fucking significant. Maybe it's not true, which is why it's worth thinking about just to double check. You don't want to take it on blind faith that what you're being told is what it is. You don't know. So first, you got to just verify it. That's why you contemplate, is to verify these things for yourself. Does it make sense? Does it pass muster? Does it hold water? How does it actually work is the next step. And then tracing out all the cons. What does this mean? What does that mean for my relationships? What does that mean for my career? What does it mean for my notions of what reality is? And what does that mean for physics? What does that mean for science? What does that mean for philosophy? What does that mean for thinking? There's a lot to ponder there. Here's another example. You've probably heard this one before. I've talked about it before. The map is not the territory. Now, that's a really profound statement. And most people, they hear it and they think it's kind of cute and interesting, and then they put it into their back pocket and they forget about it. But to really understand that the map is not the territory is just so ridiculously significant. And the consequences of it, they permeate throughout all human culture, everything that human beings put their hands on is corrupted by this problem of not understanding that the map is not the territory. But that requires contemplation on your part to see that. And then for you, that statement will become a very important piece of wisdom that you will keep with you and you will use for the rest of your life. And it'll make a very big difference in the quality of your life from now. And then it's going to snowball for years and decades until the end. And it's going to have huge ramifications for you, but not if you don't contemplate it, not if you don't take it seriously, not if you don't trace through those consequences as you would with a mathematical proof. Here's another example for you. The Buddha devoted over 40 years of his life teaching basically two things: what is suffering and how to extinguish it. And he said very simply that all suffering comes from clinging to impermanent objects. Sounds simple enough, right? But do you grasp the significance of what he said? All suffering. That should already ring alarm bells in your mind when you hear something like that. All suffering is caused by blank. That sounds like it's pretty fucking important, doesn't it? After all, isn't that why you're here? Is because you don't want to suffer? Isn't that the ultimate scenario that you could envision in your life, is that you will have a life with no more suffering? Isn't that what you really want? So that's pretty goddamn important, right? If someone is giving you a solution to every single problem that you have in life in one statement, that sounds like that's worthy of some contemplation on your part. And not just to say, oh, yeah, of course, of course, of course. And then just move on to the next thing. No. It's not move on to the next thing. It's like spend 10 years contemplating this. Chew it to get all the juice out of it, because this thing contains a lot of juice. Here's another example. All fear is a concept about the future. How's that for a powerful insight? And that's actually one that I learned from Peter Ralston. And what this means is that you literally cannot experience fear unless you have an image of the future in your mind. That's what fear is. Sounds pretty fucking significant, doesn't it? That's not just an idea that you put in the back of your pocket, or something that you just believe. That's something to be deeply contemplated and investigated. Is that really true? And if it is, what does that really mean for your life? And what would it mean if you actually mastered this one insight, just this one insight, if you actually mastered this, what would this mean for your life? Is it possible that you can eliminate all fear by understanding this one insight deeply enough? And then what would you need to contemplate? How much would you need to contemplate to really to get to the bottom of it, to really see the inner workings of how your fear works, how it's generated? Here's another example for you. I've said in the past, in certain episodes, that I consider meditation to be the number one personal development habit, the most important that you can put into place in your life, the highest leverage. So when you hear someone like me saying something like that, that's worthy of contemplation. That's worthy not just of going and doing it like a monkey because I told you to. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying before you even go and do it, just contemplate the significance of this. Why is it true? Is it actually true? What does this really mean? How come it's true? What will it mean for me if I actually put this habit into place in my life? You see, the reason you struggle with putting a meditation habit into place in your life is not because you're busy or because it's hard or because you're lazy or whatever. It's because your mind hasn't actually penetrated the truth of this statement. You don't see the significance of it. And you never will, so long as you just listen to people talking about it without tracing through the steps yourself, contemplating it yourself. Here's another example for you. No self and non-duality. This is a really deep can of worms. To grasp the significance of no self and non-duality is really a feat. And I'm not even talking about to actually become enlightened. I'm just saying to conceptually grasp the significance of it and its ramifications and what it really means. People don't get it. I mean, I keep talking about these concepts and ideas for years now, but people still don't get it. They think they get it. They think they know what enlightenment is, but they don't grasp the significance of what no self. What does it really mean that there is no self? That's a very significant statement. That's not said lightly. That's a ridiculously significant statement. This has ramifications for everything, for science, for philosophy, like for physics, for everything. Every single aspect of your life is affected by this statement, if it's true. And non-duality. What does it mean to say that reality is not dual? To grasp the significance of that is just conceptually. Just let's begin with just conceptually. Is very important because you start off just understanding this concept. Then you got to move on to direct experience. We'll get to that, but let's just start conceptually. A lot of people don't even get the conceptual part right. Non-duality. That means that every single duality that you know, like cause and effect, good and bad, self and other, existence and non-existence, life and death, and any other duality you can think of, that it's non-dual. That there actually is no duality. That they are one. That all these distinctions are one. Think that through. Think what that really means if that's true. See? Just the contemplation of this one thing right here can transform your whole life. But you have to actually contemplate it. It won't change your life just to go read it about it in a book. I mean, that's helpful too, but I'm trying to point you towards deepening your comprehension of these ideas. How about the example of success not being equivalent to growth? That's a very significant statement. Something that I've shot episodes about in the past. And people hear that, like, I could be coaching someone, and I've coached people on the phone and stuff on Skype, and we would talk about this sort of concept, and people who are very like business-oriented, career-oriented, success-oriented people. And I would talk to them about this, but then, you know, they hear it, but it goes in one ear and out the other. And they're like, oh yeah, Leo, of course, I get that. But I still have this problem. I still have this problem. I'm still frustrated. I'm still not happy. I'm still da-da-da-da because you're pursuing success. And success is not growth. You see? But these people, they don't contemplate it. They don't really think about it. They don't draw the connections together. Which is what the problem was with the first example. The example about your opinions, other people's opinions of you being irrelevant. People know that intellectually, but it's not working in their life because they haven't actually made the connections. That requires work. And they don't do that work because they assume that, oh, well, if I just know it, shouldn't that be enough? And then they say, well, Leo, your advice and whatever you're saying, these principles, they don't really work. What good does it do me just to believe that people's opinions of me don't matter when, in fact, I get anxiety and fear and all this other sort of stuff? What good does it do me? Because you haven't really contemplated it. That's the problem. If you did, you would stop being at the effect of it. But you haven't. So you just think you have, and therefore you're still at the effect of it. Here's another example. Good and bad do not exist. It's a very simple statement. And many people would agree with that on the surface. I mean, a lot of people would disagree with me. So that's one step down. I'm not even going to get into that here. But even those people who do agree with me, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, of course, Leo, yeah, that makes sense. But do you realize how significant it is to say this, that there is no good and bad? If there is no good and bad, then what the fuck are you complaining about in your life? Why are you suffering? Why do you have opinions about things? Why do you criticize people? Why do you get angry? What are you angry about? If nothing is good and bad, what are you angry about? Oh, well, see, now, when it really gets to the nitty-gritty of your life, all of a sudden, you don't really believe that nothing is good and bad. That's a bullshit philosophical belief that you hold. Because in reality, when something happens to you, someone pisses in your soup, then all of a sudden, you start to believe in good and bad really quickly. All your ideals fly out the window. When someone scratches your car, when someone calls you a bad name, when someone insults you online, when someone trolls you, when someone cheats on you, all of a sudden now, you get all hot and bothered by these things. Why is that? Because deep down, you actually believe that there is good and bad. And that's because you haven't really chewed this idea deeply enough yet to really realize that there is no good and bad. And that's one of the whole tricks to this work, is that it's really easy just to believe things and to think you've got it just because you believe it or just because you agree with it. And that's not nearly going to be good enough to get the results that you want to get. So you have to be careful that when I'm speaking, I speak about a lot of topics. I say a lot of things. I give you a lot of insights. And it's very easy to agree with them. I mean, a lot of people disagree with them. So they don't even get to the point of agreement. Okay, that's a problem in and of itself. But I'm saying that even the people that do agree, watch out, that's a trap right there. And you start to believe it, and then that's another trap. And I say something like, you have no free will, and then people start to believe that. And that becomes a huge trap. Because see, you still actually act like you have free will. You've never actually experienced no free will. You don't really know what that truth is pointing to. To you, it's an idea, and you buy into that idea, and you start to believe it, and then you've actually set yourself backwards. Because see, now there's this weird thing going on in your mind where deep down in reality, when you're behaving in your everyday life, you actually behave as though you have free will. That's why you're frustrated with yourself, because you want to control reality and you're frustrated with the fact that you don't have control over reality. And that frustrates you because you believe you should have control over reality. See, if you actually understood that you have zero control over reality and you really got that, you directly experienced that, there would be no problem because you don't have control. You don't need control. And there's no problem with that. You're not fighting for control. The problem happens is when you have a belief that there is no free will, but then deep down, really, you have an even deeper subconscious sort of belief, which actually says, yeah, but I should be controlling life. Something's wrong here. See, because you haven't really contemplated no free will. You don't really know what that means. You don't know the full consequences of it. Here's another example. Manipulation corrupts relationships. That's a very significant statement. And people could hear that, like I could be coaching someone over the phone about how they're manipulating people and how they're manipulating their relationship and in general, how they're manipulating all of life, the whole problem of manipulation. And they'll hear that and say, oh yeah, Leo, of course, but how do I get what I want? Yeah, Leo, that's all well and good, but then how do I become happy? No, you don't understand. You're manipulating. That's the problem. Yeah, but Leo, how do I become happy? You're manipulating. That's the problem. Contemplate this. Contemplate what manipulation means. And look inside your relationship and look at how you're manipulating inside your relationship and how that's corrupting every relationship that you're in. And here's the final example. You can tap into infinite intelligence with your mind. You know that? You can do that? That's possible? That's a very significant thing. You're being told that you can tap into infinite intelligence, infinite creativity. And you can use this to create your life, to create art, to create inventions, to create businesses, to do so many things. You can tap into this intelligence. You can tap into this intelligence to tell you everything you need to live a ridiculously powerful and joyful life. You can tap into that intelligence. But then if I say that to you and you just hear it in some episode, it's like, yeah, Leo, okay, good. But then like, so what do I do with that? How's that going to help me? How's that going to help me get laid? Or how's that going to help me when I'm suffering and I'm lonely and I'm depressed? How's that going to help me? Right, see, because what you need to do is you need to sit down and spend months contemplating the significance of the fact that you have a mind that's able to tap into infinite intelligence. And that this is a resource that you have barely ever used in your life, but that you could learn to use. But that requires contemplation. How do you contemplate? I have entire episodes about that, so I won't go into it here. Just very simply, the way you contemplate is you take a topic or a question or a statement and you sit there and you think about it. And you just ask yourself questions. Contemplation is nothing more than asking questions of a topic. So for example, you could say, non-duality, what does that really mean? And you could sit there for an hour, for hours, every day, for hours, just contemplating, what does non-duality really mean? And what are the consequences of that? And you see, you're just asking questions. It's like, oh, okay, that's the consequence. What's another consequence? And what's another consequence? And what would it mean if I was fully living aligned with non-duality? What would that mean for my life? What would that mean for my relationships? And yada, yada, yada. So you just continue like that. And so on for all the other statements that I said. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. Almost every video I talk about, there's some kind of juicy insight, at least one, probably a dozen or more, that you could spend months, years contemplating like this. So this opens up the field. And this work is about going deep. It's not about new. It's not about getting new ideas. It's not about amassing a giant collection of new fancy ideas. It's not about quantity. It's not about more, more, more. Be careful with those traps. It's not about more and more advanced and complex mental masturbatory sort of theories and models about the world. It's not about that. It's about going deep with the simple stuff. It's about really grasping the fundamentals of your psyche, of reality, of how human beings work, things like that. Let me talk to you now about the levels of understanding. There are different levels of comprehension that are possible. And these levels, they sort of go through stages. There's a progression. It's a rather linear progression. This is just something I sort of identified for myself, thinking about this topic. So the first stage is that you just hear about an idea, and now, because you've heard about it, now you know it's a thing. Like, okay, I've heard about enlightenment, I know it's a thing. Before I heard about it, I didn't even know it was a thing. Or it's like, I've heard about psychedelics, now I know it's a thing. Before I really didn't. Then, from there, you move on to step number two, which is properly understanding the concept. So you hear about the idea that there's no free will, okay. Then you move on to step number two, is that you actually properly understand the concept as it's being communicated to you, being very careful not to misinterpret it. And this is where a lot of people go wrong on step number two. Most people don't even get to the point of properly understanding the concept. Never mind having a direct experience or some profound enlightenment experience or anything like that. Just start by understanding the concept without misinterpreting it. That's a challenge. It could take you a couple of years with a deep concept like non-duality. It could take you, well, it took me a good 3 or 4 years of research, reading dozens of books, going to seminars, going to workshops, going to retreats, doing all sorts of crazy shit, and then thinking about it for many, many hours, practicing self-inquiry for hundreds, maybe even 1,000 hours. After all of that, only then did I start to actually fully wrap my mind around the concept without misunderstanding it. That's actually a big achievement for a topic like non-duality, where that particular topic is extra hard to properly understand concept because there's so many traps. And it's such an anti-conceptual sort of topic. But there are other smaller topics where you don't need to spend that much time, that much effort, just to understand it conceptually. But still, you know, very easy to misunderstand something like no free will. Or it's very easy to misunderstand like a concept like happiness, for example. Then you move on to step number three, which is actually not just conceptually understanding a thing, but tracing all of its ramifications and seeing the significance of it still conceptually. So you don't just know what non-duality is, but then you start to fathom like, oh, well, if this is true, this is a huge thing. This is a really big thing. If this is true, I got to really start to take it seriously if it's true. Maybe I don't know yet if it's true, but if it is, oh boy. Because that would mean this and this and then this and that and this. This would change and that would change and all of society would change and okay. See, you start to get it. Still conceptually, but you start to see the significance. Then you move on to step number four, which is you actually start to get your initial glimpses of this truth happening in your direct experience. And that's a big, big leap that most people never even get to. Most people never get to stage four. And when you do, it's a real eye-opener because you're like, oh, that's what they were talking about. is different than I thought it was. What are they talking about? It's not like they were saying it's different. It's so different. It's like, it's actual. It's actual. It's not an idea. Oh, see, it works like that. And usually what you discover is that a lot of the stuff that they told you about this thing that now you discovered, because you've directly experienced it, it's like, wait a minute, what were those guys smoking? This is not how it really is. It's different. And then other times you discover, no, it's actually exactly as they told you. And then from that, you move on to step five, which is starting to see these glimpses intermittently on a regular basis. Occasionally, they're still kind of rare, but you get multiple glimpses. And I'm not just talking about non-duality or enlightenment here, by the way. I'm talking about any insight. So an insight, for example, that like manipulation corrupts relationships. That would be a more basic insight, right? So what you would see there in step five is you would see that, oh, I'm manipulating here and I'm manipulating there and here and there and there and here. Okay, I'm manipulating. And then you see the consequences of your manipulation. Like, oh yeah, this manipulation has led to this argument that led to this fight, that led to this breakup, that led to this, that led to that. Oh, and then it leads to my suffering. And then I'm suffering because I'm manipulating. Oh, and I see as I'm actually texting, oh, I'm manipulating as I'm texting. Oh, I see. It's not just an idea. And then that happens to you occasionally. You don't see it all the time, just occasionally, because you're still mostly asleep, mostly unconscious. And then finally, you move on to step six, which is where you start to see this stuff constantly. You become constantly conscious of it to the point where it's difficult to not see anymore. And that's the ultimate stage. And at this stage, you also start seeing the full ramifications, not just in theory, but in practice. So there's a sort of flowering effect that takes place where you really grasp this nugget, but then this nugget is not just an isolated nugget. It is interwoven with everything else in your life, and everything starts to shift in subtle ways. At this stage, you also become very aware of all the traps in this process. You become aware of all the mechanisms that exist which cause you to go fall back asleep, to become unconscious, and to stop recognizing it. And you're able to bring yourself out of these traps. Maybe you fall into a trap once in a while, but still, you're able to recognize you've fallen into a trap, you've become unconscious, you're able to wake yourself up a little bit. And also, you're getting better and better at avoiding the traps entirely. So you can sort of foresee the trap about to happen, like you're about to manipulate someone, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to manipulate. Oh, okay, let me just drop it. That's a trap. You see? Or maybe you're about to manipulate, or maybe even you did manipulate, you're starting to manipulate, And then you notice your justifications about how, oh, it's okay if I manipulate. In this situation, it's actually better if I let myself manipulate. See, you start to see that justification come up and you're like, oh, that's also a trap. See, that's a justification that is pushing me to continue to manipulate, even though I know I'm not supposed to manipulate because it causes me suffering. Like, oh, okay. I see that. That's one trap. And usually with traps, there's like two sides to a trap. You can swing your pendulum too much in this direction or in this direction. So it's like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be honest. Like, let's say maybe you're working on honesty. And it's like, okay, I should be honest. So one trap is lying, but then the opposite trap of that is being too honest, brutally honest, or honest in a sort of inconsiderate manner. See, those are like the two ends of the spectrum there. And so you're going to swing your pendulum sort of back and forth and back and forth. And then as you get to this sixth stage, you're gonna see the dangers of both ends of that trap. And finally, still in this sixth stage, what you're ultimately gonna get to is you're gonna get to an understanding of why the mechanism that you're exploring is inevitable, why it's absolutely necessary, why reality couldn't really be any other way than the way that it is. So at first, in the first stage, you're going to be very judgmental about all this stuff, like manipulating. Maybe you're going to be working on your manipulation, let's say. Then you're going to get to a stage where you get a little bit better about not manipulating. But then what's going to happen is you're going to judge other people for manipulating. And you're going to be like, oh, how dare they manipulate? And then you're going to get this whole thing about like, oh, we should end all the manipulation in the world because manipulation is bad and evil and all this. So you'll fall into that trap. But eventually you work through that. And then eventually you get to the very end. You understand the whole thing. You will also understand why it exists. If I may use this verbiage, you will understand why God created it. And why it couldn't be any other way. And why it's perfect exactly the way it is. You will see that. Not only will you see that in ordinary situations, but you would also see it with evil stuff. Shit that normally people would never, ever admit is inevitable or is necessary or is perfect. Like, you will look at rape. You will look at war. You will look at genocide. You will look at theft. You will look at lying. You will look at politicians. You will look at corruption in Washington. You will look at all this stuff, and eventually you get to a point where you will understand why it's necessary. And that gives you peace. So you can't be at peace so long as you're fighting the world. And you're going to be fighting the world so long as you believe that things are, well, that they could be otherwise. And again, be careful not to misinterpret what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that rape couldn't be otherwise in the sense that you couldn't stop doing it. That's not what I'm saying. Nor am I saying that it shouldn't be punished. I'm not saying any of those things. You have to be very careful here. I'm saying you will understand why it exists. And you will come to peace with it. I think that's one of the deepest levels of understanding you can get to. And that's a level of understanding that most people, when they're at the early stages, they don't even want to hear it. That this is a possibility. Even the possibility of such a thing on certain topics for certain people is such an outrageous statement that it sounds like heresy. It sounds like insanity. It sounds like criminality. That's what it sounds like. So usually people who get to this stage, they keep it to themselves. They don't go around talking about it very much on TV and stuff like that. You don't see people coming around and saying, oh, rape is inevitable and therefore everything is perfect and reality is fine and we don't need to do anything. You don't hear them talking like that. But deep down, they're at peace with the evils of the world and all the other shit that usually disturbs them and disturbs other people. So those are levels. Now, these levels, I mean, they're not clearly delineated in reality. I just made up these levels. I gave them numberings. I just made this whole thing up, right? So this is just my way of categorizing. Every categorization scheme is just a human invention. So don't get the mistake that these levels are somehow etched into stone by God. They're not. Let's talk about some of the obstacles to understanding. So throughout this process of moving up these stages or down these stages, however you want to think of it, you're going to have the following obstacles. Closed-mindedness. That's huge. And it's especially huge at the early stages. Judgments. That's also huge. You're going to be judging yourself and other people and situations and ideas. You're going to be extremely judgmental and opinionated. And that's going to be a huge obstacle for you to deepening your understanding. Arrogance is going to become an obstacle as well. You're going to feel like you already know this stuff. Or that you're more advanced than this, you're already beyond this, and you know better than that teacher, and you know better than this person, you know better than that advice given there. You know everything. And you will have to be deeply humbled. And that's going to be a painful process for you to realize how arrogant you were and how stupid your arrogance is. That's going to be a painful process if you choose to push through it further and further. But many people stop there because it's too painful. They don't want to go through the emotional labor of that. Complacency will be a big obstacle. You will just think, oh, yeah, I got it. Leo, non-duality, yeah, I got it. What's next? This sort of complacency. Or even like, yeah, Leo, I've traced through the consequences. So what? This sort of complacency. Laziness will become a big obstacle, especially in that critical transition between understanding a thing conceptually and then moving on to stage 4, where you actually start to get glimpses of the direct experiences, because the difference between the conceptual stage and the direct experience stage is that you need to put in work. And most people are so lazy that they're not going to put in the work. And by work, I mean a lot of times just mental work, the work of contemplation. Why don't you contemplate more? Because you're fucking lazy. You don't want to. You just want to believe. You just want to be given the answer. You just want the conclusions of other people's contemplations. You don't want to contemplate anything for yourself. You don't want to actually go through a mathematical proof. You just want a trick to get the answer. That's laziness. And believing will be a huge obstacle. There will be a strong tendency just to say, okay, Leo, I got it. I got it. I'm just going to believe you. I'm just going to trust you. I got it. I know you're right. I just know you're right. Okay, I got it. That's good enough. But it's not good enough. That does nothing for you. Believing me, not believing me, agreeing with me, not agreeing, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Not when we're talking about going and using these ideas to transform your life. That's the biggest mistake that happens with all religious traditions. The biggest mistake is that people mistake having a direct experience of something like God with a belief. And they think that, well, a belief, it's good enough. I mean, the direct experience, yeah, I know I could have one. I know it's going to take a long time, so I'll just believe it. Is that good enough, Leo? I mean, I'm going to die anyways, and I'll get there eventually anyways. So I'll just believe it. As if that's going to help you. Or like with morality. This is a big problem with morality. People start to believe in morality. And they say, well, I mean, Leo, the greatest sages and mystics, they have all come down and they told us that we need to not lie and not cheat and not kill and not eat animals and all this sort of stuff. So I believe them. It sounds like what they're saying sounds good and it sounds right. So I'm just going to believe them. I'm just going to do what they say. What's wrong with that? After all, I mean, why do I need to go and do all the stuff the Buddha did to get to the same answers that he already gave me in a book? I'll just read the book and I'll just get those answers. I'll just believe them. Good enough, right? And the answer, of course, is not even close. Not even close. Believing a thing doesn't show you why it's true. And it often has the exact opposite effect. Because what happens is that you put a thin veneer of fake belief on top, but underneath is your actual, all your behavior patterns that are hardwired into your subconscious mind. And those are usually the exact opposite of your noble, flimsy little veneer of ideals and beliefs. So while you might believe as an ideal that lying and cheating and stealing and killing is bad and all this sort of stuff, but then in practice, your entire psyche is functioning completely the opposite. And now you've created this rift inside of you where it's like you have these ideals and beliefs here that are very noble, but then in your life you behave like a fucking animal. And then you have to go through these mental gymnastics to justify all this stuff and make sense of it. And it's a big mess. And it really holds you back. See, and then you feel guilty about it. You start to hide it from yourself and from other people. You start to lie about it. So that just doubles your sin right there. In these videos, I talk a lot about my conclusions. A lot of the stuff that I share is conclusions from my own investigations, and of course, a lot of stuff that I've read from other people and learned from other teachers, so by no means am I originating all these ideas myself. But if I'm not originating them still, I'm doing some work to piece them together in my mind. So you don't need to originate every single idea, that's not what I'm saying. But you do need to work at it, to put the pieces together and to try to work towards directly experiencing the thing that's being pointed at by the teachings, by the words. You need to follow the words and the concepts to the thing being pointed to. And that is an active process. That's the difference between hearing a truth and deriving a truth for yourself. And this is a ridiculously important point, that you take on the attitude in life, and especially with this work and everything that I teach, the attitude should be that you are going to take ownership of deriving these things for yourself in exactly the same way that you would if you wanted to be a good math student. You're not going to get A's in math class. Well, actually, maybe you can. You actually could. You could get A's in math class just by shuffling symbols around and getting good at shuffling symbols. But my point is that you're not going to have an actual deep understanding of mathematics without going through the process of going through the proofs and seeing the mechanics and the logic of it for yourself. It's not going to be enough just to hear a teacher talking about it. You have to go through it and see why it's true. In the same way that the original inventors of those mathematical concepts derived those how did they invent it? They didn't pull it out of their ass. They had to go through the process. They had to trace the truth with their mind. And that's what you have to do here. And if you just go and you look up the answers in the back of the book, or you take the answers that I told you, which is the equivalent of that, you are doing yourself a great disservice. Because the transformation, the thing you want from listening to this, is gotten not from listening to me, but from listening to me and then going and deriving it for yourself and tracing the truth with your own mind for yourself. Which is why, if you ever wonder, why are Zen teachers such assholes and they speak in riddles and they don't tell me the answers that I want to hear, this is why. Because of this problem. And this problem becomes especially problematic when it comes to consciousness work and enlightenment work, because to be given the answer is almost the greatest disservice. Because as soon as they give you the answer, you think you've got the answer, you think you understand, when really you don't understand. And then these answers fill your mind, and then that actually is like a step backwards, even though to you it seems like it's a step forwards. The problem is that people are lazy and that nobody wants to derive anything for themselves. And that's why religion is so prevalent, and that's why morality is so prevalent. Because they just don't want to derive it for themselves. They don't understand the significance of this entire topic that I have spent an hour here now, almost an hour, talking about. See? So the reason I'm belaboring this point and talking about it in such great length is because it's a very, very big trap. And don't think that you have to be a religious nutcase to fall into this trap. You will fall into this trap regardless. You might be the most intelligent person in the world, the most well-meaning person in the world. You start to get into a little bit deeper consciousness work, and you will fall into this trap many, many, many times, which is why I'm stressing it so much here. Imagine being a lion who never hunts. Imagine a lion who just sits at a cafe under the table and just begs for scraps from people. What kind of lion would you be if you took on that kind of attitude towards life? You would be a shit lion because you wouldn't learn how to hunt. And that's exactly the situation here. For a human being, our power is not with our claws and our teeth. It's not with our animal-like hunting abilities. It's with your mind. We are conceptual creatures, and we live or die by the concepts in our mind and how we learn to use our mind and all the ways in which the mind can be easily misused. And the biggest problem is that people get lazy about it. They don't realize this. They start to take this stuff for granted. Society these days makes it very easy to take concepts like these for granted. because they aren't strictly necessary. You can survive without them. You'll just survive and you'll have a very ordinary, mediocre existence. And you'll suffer a lot and you won't even know why. But if you really want to thrive and you want to get to your full potential in life, then you need to learn how to hunt. Not with your claws, but with your mind. And the way you hunt with your mind is by contemplating, by deriving these truths for yourself. So how do you increase your degree of comprehension? Remember, there's really two lessons that I want you to take away from this, two high-level lessons from this episode. One is that there are many degrees of comprehension to every single insight, which makes it very worthwhile to dig deeper into every single one. And the second point is that you got to derive some of these truths and insights for yourself. And that that's also very worthwhile. And that's, in fact, where most of the growth lies. So how do you increase the depth of comprehension? As follows. Start taking ideas more seriously. Don't take them as mere philosophy or mere ideas. Ideas can be very powerful things. Start to seek out true understanding rather than results. Don't focus on results. Don't focus on fixing a particular problem you have. Seek to understand the situation. To really understand it means that you know how the mechanics of it come together and how they work and why they work. So that's a change in your attitude. That's a change in your intentions to all of your problems in life. Most people, they don't go into their problems with a desire for true understanding. It's like, why am I depressed? Well, I don't care about that. Just fix my depression. Or it's like, why can't I get laid? Well, I don't care about that. Just help me get laid. No. Let's have you understand the situation, the problem, and also the solution. From that, you'll get everything else that you want. And the next step is, of course, contemplation. Go watch my video about contemplation. It teaches you how to contemplate and start contemplating on a regular basis. And like I said, contemplation is just asking yourself questions about a topic. Make sure that you're working the ramifications and that you're thinking about what a topic really means. What are the consequences of it, if it's true? Be careful about assuming that you've got it, that you've figured it out. Usually, with these sorts of topics, if you think you've got it, that's the first sign that you don't got it. Always assume that there is a deeper level, a deeper degree of comprehension. This becomes a huge trap for people. Especially people doing non-duality work. They get a glimpse here or there and they think they got it. No, you don't got shit. You don't got shit. This thing goes a million miles deeper. You've barely scratched the surface. Also, start to interconnect everything. Start to look at things from the big picture perspective, from a holistic perspective. Start to see everything interconnected. And start to separate out the trivial from the cosmically significant. So when you're hearing somebody talk or teaching you something, you're reading something in a book, you should get very good at developing this skill of like, wait a minute, is this a cosmically significant point or is this a trivial point? And make sure you make that distinction. And the cosmically significant points, those are the ones you really want to put a lot of your energy and attention on. So that's how you increase your degrees of comprehension. Remember that in this work, derivation and contemplation are not optional things. They are mandatory. That's what the work involves. That's why we call it work. If you try to shortcut that, then you're just not going to see the kind of results that you hear people talking about, that you hear me talking about, that you see some other people talking about. The deepest wisdom comes in tight, simple packages, which makes it deceptively simple, which makes it very easy to be arrogant to say, oh, I got this, I figured it out. What you got to do is you got to learn how to spot the wisdom, how to spot these tight little packages, and then you got to get good at unpacking them. Not as a chore, but that this can be an enjoyable process. It doesn't have to be a chore. Derivation doesn't have to be a chore. That's the end. If you like this episode, make sure you click that like button for me. And come check out actualize.org. This is my website. Check out my blog. Check out the forum. Come talk with people there. Get ideas. Get inspired. Get help. Get advice. I'm on there a lot. I answer lots of people's questions. Come look at my book list. Read the books on my book list. Check out the Life Purpose Course. It'll change your life. And the final thing that I'll say is that I hope you understand how these videos are supposed to work. They're supposed to work as follows. These videos are dessert, which means that you spend your whole week doing your homework, doing exercises, working on yourself, meditating, contemplating, reading books, doing all that stuff. And then at the end of the week, on Sunday, you get your dessert. You get some high-level discussion, commentary, dissecting, and some analysis. That's what I do. You get that from me. And then that's cool. That inspires you. That gets you some ideas, gives you some new directions to go on. And then next week, you go and you follow up on that, and you keep doing the stuff you've been doing before. And then you build on that like that. And then the next week, you get another piece of dessert, which is the next episode. So, you see, be careful not to glut yourself with dessert. Dessert, 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 but no work, no homework, no follow-through. That's going to be a problem. If you do that, you're going to turn this work into a tool of the devil. And that's very easy to do. Very easy to do. Religion is all about that. Is turning this work into a tool of the devil. And how does that happen? By just starting to believe stuff, getting lazy, and not deriving anything for yourself, not tracing anything with your mind, not actually transforming yourself, just believing a bunch of shit, and then you're still a devil on the inside. Just now with a little glossy coating veneer on the outside. And now you think you're not the devil, but actually, this little veneer gives you just enough justification to be an even bigger devil than you were without it. So watch out. And stay with me for more in the future.